Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Today we speak with Dakota Elder, Darlene Pipeboy. She gives us an update on the plans to travel to the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. We'll also talk with Dane Wigington about the growing awareness within the academic community about geoengineering. But first, let's look at some of the stories in other news. Here's one. Worldwide march against Monsanto set for May 25th. People the world over angry at the chemical giant Monsanto, a huge multinational biotech corporation, have scheduled more than 250 marches around the globe on May 25th in response to the group Anonymous's call for action against genetically modified crops. The group claims Monsanto is altering, quote, the true nature of our food supply without concern about long-term effects on human health, because they are creating a monopoly on the supply of seeds for farmers and because of increasing evidence of long-term environmental damages, according to an anonymous video announcing the day of action. Many people around the world believe that for too long, Monsanto has been the benefactor of corporate subsidies and political favoritism, and that organic and small farmers continue to suffer losses while Monsanto, they allege, continues to, quote, forge its monopoly over the world's food supply, including exclusive patenting rights over seeds and genetic makeup, according to one website promoting the protest events. That's May 25th, a worldwide march against Monsanto. Here's another story on the naturalnews.com site. Dr. Oz viciously attacks organic foods and farmers' markets, pushes feedlot beef, urges clueless consumers to eat more pesticides and GMO. Dr. Oz has finally done it. He has sold out to Big Ag by declaring organic foods to be, quote, elitist and snooty and no better than conventional foods. The man who once urged Americans to eat organic has sold his soul to the criminally run food giants in a mind-blowing editorial piece recently published in Time magazine. Look for Dr. Oz to promote GMOs next, as cozying up to Monsanto probably won't be too far behind. The man is already on the record pushing vaccines, talking about how good they are for the public health, while failing to mention that vaccines admittedly contain mercury, formaldehyde, aluminum, and MSG. He's also the same guy who was behind the Real Age internet scheme that recruited people into a promotional network where they were barraged by drug-pushing ads from Big Pharma. Dr. Oz also owned a huge number of option shares in a vaccine technology company. In his Time magazine editorial piece, Dr. Oz declares organic foods to be elitist and appropriate only for the 1%. This clever bit of propaganda is designed to try to align conventional foods, i.e. pesticide-ridden GMO foods, with the 99% by making them sound more populist. As if the people's food is pesticides and GMOs. Does this man have no shame? Is there any corporate poison he won't promote to his viewers? Oz declares organic food is, quote, not democratic. Quote, organic food is great, it's just not very democratic. Dr. Oz declares as if choosing organic is somehow an affront to America. Quote, you don't need to eat like the 1% to eat healthily, he says. In other words, keep sucking down more GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and chemicals. Buying organic is anti-American, you're being told. Dr. Oz's message, of course, has been indistinguishable from that of Monsanto. It's all the same deception. You don't need clean, non-GMO food to be healthy. Keep eating all that conventional crap that poisons you with synthetic chemicals, and you'll be just fine. The article continues. Here's a story. Privacy is off the table in a post-9/11 world, says New York City police chief. The rhetoric in the wake of the Boston Marathon bombings is starting to recall the heightened fear that took hold after the terrorist attacks on September 11th, 2001. That's especially true in New York City, where suspected bombers were allegedly planning a second attack. In a press conference, both Mayor Bloomberg and Police Commissioner Ray Kelly used the suspect's alleged plot to make the case for more surveillance cameras. You're never going to know where all of our cameras are, Bloomberg said. And that's one of the ways you deter people. They just don't know whether the person next to you is just somebody sitting there or a detective watching. Kelly promised that the NYPD, is expanding its already massive network of cameras. The number of public sector surveillance cameras in New York City is reportedly between 3,500 and 6,000. In an interview earlier this week, Kelly praised the network of smart cameras that allow police to remotely read licenses and recognize suspicious packages. The cameras are part of the NYPD's elite surveillance system, developed by Microsoft within a 3-year period. It's known as the Domain Awareness System, or simply the Dashboard, with the total cost reportedly between $30 million and $40 million. The Dashboard aggregates data from cameras, mapped crime patterns, 9/11 alerts, arrest records, parking tickets, and radiation detectors, and it's getting smarter all the time. The cameras can detect when a bag or package is abandoned in a public place, Kelly told MSNBC earlier this week, and he hopes to expand this capability, which he refers to as video analytics. The NYPD is almost certainly the most advanced police department in the country, even expanding to include overseas bureaus in the years since the terrorist attacks on September 11th. However, other cities and even other countries have taken note of the domain awareness system. Police departments in other cities, as well as law enforcement and large events outside the U.S., have approached Microsoft about the licensing software. There are questions as to whether surveillance cameras actually prevent attacks. Boston's relatively extensive network of cameras still failed to catch the bombers in the act or dissuade them from their crime. The extensiveness and sophistication of the NYPD's surveillance network also has the ACLU and other public rights advocates worried. But Kelly believes standards of privacy are changing. Quote, the privacy issue has really been taken off the table, he said. I don't think people are concerned about it. I think people accept it in a post-9/11 world. This is New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly. Kelly's sense of conviction is reminiscent of Mayor Bloomberg's statement on the use of drones to monitor civilians. Quote, get used to it. I guess it's reminiscent, but what Kelly is saying could be true. He says, I think people accept it in a post-9/11 world, but that doesn't mean it's right. Let's go to a clip of Bill Brown from a past recording many years ago when he was conducting the surveillance camera tours in Manhattan. Let's have a listen.
No, this is the camera.
Where? Right there. Uh-huh.
So... you can actually see through the globe. The idea would be like a two-way mirror. Yeah. You can't see in, but they can see out. But if you look carefully, you can see the cameras in there, and it's pointing at their door. So you might want to try take turns going up underneath it. But inside of it, it can rotate around. And that one of the first things you'd realize when people say to you, you shouldn't be concerned about cameras because they're just like police officers, right away that you know this is wrong, because there's no police officer who can stand here in this kind of cold, for one thing, without blinking, rubbing his eyes, or being able to stand here and turn his head around 360 degrees. Even RoboCop can't do that. There's a big leap in capabilities from a human eye, which is what our laws are based upon, is what a human being can do. There's a jump because of technology. This is not an electric eye. This is a surveillance camera, and it has nothing to do with human eyes or a human head at all, especially because human eyes can't take pictures. We have to use our memories to recall something. This, even though there's nothing going on out here warranting it, can be filming away without even telling us. Just like the pole down there, there's no sign saying you're being watched.
Yeah, can I ask you a crazy question?
Nobody's looking at what they're looking at. Okay. For example, if there was a police officer or a security guard standing right there, you could see what he was looking at. You could see, do you notice that he's only looking at the young women? and he's only looking at him in a certain way,
right.
You'd see that because it's right in front
right
of you.
In front of you right.
But this person can do the same thing, but there's no way of seeing what he's seeing or those guys up there. You think that they might be doing their jobs right, but we're human beings. You're trusting a godlike function, the function of watching from the skies, to somebody who's going to do it for just human things. And he's going to be looking at the girls. He's going to be looking at people he thinks look weird, who don't belong there. None of that is his business.
All right, so are these cameras here illegal? That's what you're telling me?
Well, right now it's not like they're legal or illegal. There's just no laws. That our laws are based upon that you have the right not to have your voice recorded. You know, audio tap, eavesdropping. So if this was a microphone, they'd take it down tomorrow because it would be illegal. But because it's a video camera, our laws don't mention the word video.
Okay.
So that they can get away with things using cameras that they can't get away with things using microphones.
So what is the legislation coming through? Congress about these cameras is hitting up in here.
It's only going to start.
But
why
in this community?
That.
I want to know why. What's the main reason so much in this community? I mean, this is a. I'm not trying to be biased enough. But this is a black community here. You understand? And it's like under circumstances. Why are they watching us? What's the circumstances of them watching us?
Yeah, they're beginning to put millions of dollars.
Though,
yeah.
This is these dollars is here as our dollars.
No, they're not.
All right, American dollars. Put it that way. Okay, we American people too, you know, but we make money on these blocks.
That's it.
I've been a vendor on these streets for 20 years out here.
That's why you're not going to be able to, because they're going to watch you. They're going to say.
So you're saying my kids is going to starve because of these cameras?
No, not going to starve. I don't think that they're any longer thinking about who's doing something wrong and then who's the victim of a crime. They're tracking everybody. They don't care about who it is anymore. They call it total information awareness. This is the idea that the U.S. military is cooking up.
Is this legislation?
No, these are their plans of what they want to keep the country safe now.
Okay.
Is Homeland Security is just tracking everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. They want to know who you are, where your credit card number is. They're just tracking people.
So, in other words, they're invading our privacy. That's what you said.
Right, exactly. So what's going to happen is for each one of us, there'll be a picture and a database full of all kinds of information that's private, but they're collecting about us because they can track us wherever we go.
Wow.
Because, like, we just wandered down, like, a block or two. We can still see that camera, which means they can still see us. Wherever we walk now in just a few blocks we're going to go, they can just move a joystick
right.
and just track us.
And zoom in and all that.
Exactly, right. And say, okay, when this little thing is done, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to follow me because I'm the one that's been doing all the talking. So when we go back to the 2-train, they use other cameras just to keep track. Where is he going? Where is he going?
Is there someone always watching? All the cameras, is there like a big set of screens and they can just switch through them, or is it like once in a while they check it? Design?
This is the best question so far, which is, are people actually watching through the cameras? And the fact of it is that the police now, when I said that they started installing the cameras in 97 and 98, they've stopped watching through the cameras because it's so expensive. It's pretty cheap to buy a couple of cameras, to buy a room to people to watch it in, but to hire people 24 hours a day to sit there and be fresh and to be watching and to be able to be on the job, that's incredibly expensive. So if you go down to the housing projects now, the South Jamaican housing projects, Albany houses, Lillian Wald in the Lower East Side, the police have 100 cameras in each housing development that they're no longer watching. They now go just straight to videotape, which means if you stand there in front of a surveillance camera and say, help, help, all that's going to happen, no one's watching, whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and they're just going to have videotape that they may be able to find later when they look it up. So what they've done now is, because of cost cutting, they've left the cameras in place, which is killing our privacy, and they're not even watching. They're basically just saying, we don't really care if you're a victim of crime. We're not going to stop it. We only care when you're a victim. So they've after the fact. And so you can see all kinds of great videotape on TV about crimes that happen. each one of them is used to try and say, look at how good videotape is that we caught a crime. Each videotape is actually saying, this is a crime that was committed despite surveillance cameras. It's useless to have good footage of a crime because you failed to stop it. We're walking down that way, we might as well get started. Gotta keep moving.
That's deep, man.
Are you a radio station?
WBAI.
That was a clip from Bill Brown giving a tour in New York City of the surveillance cameras before the Ring of Steel was put in place in downtown and midtown. We're joined by Dakota Elder, Darlene Pipeboy, to give us an update on the plans for members of her tribe to travel to New York City and attend the UN Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues. Native Americans and indigenous groups around the world meet each year to discuss social development, culture, the environment, education, health, and human rights. At this forum, Darlene will also be discussing the spiritual movement of her people. Darlene's from the Lake Traverse Reservation. She's an activist and a retired teacher. Darlene Pipeboy, welcome to Another News.
Blessings to everyone.
Can you tell listeners what specific tribe you're with?
Okay. My name is Darlene Renville Pipeboy. I live in South Dakota on the Lake Traverse Reservation. I was formerly a teacher and instructor at Sifton Mountain Community College. I was there from 1987 or 88 until 1995. Okay, so my background has always been in cultural education. So, and then that's carried over into how I interact with people today.
You and a number of others are planning to go to the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues in the coming weeks. Can you tell listeners what you want to bring awareness to?
Okay. Every year, you know, the United Nations hosts an Indigenous Forum. And this year, I think the date given to us is May 20th. And that delegations of Indigenous nations, both from United States and Canada, delegations are going to be attending to give insight into some of the issues that are confronting or confronting Canada and United States also. We feel that a forum has to be created, you know, for Indigenous people on the North American continent, simply because for Native people, we haven't had a forum to talk about issues, you know, concerning environment, which everyone has an interest in, treaty issues, land issues, natural resources, etc. I think the growing movement among all people, you know, the concern for the environment, perhaps. So it's for us, when we look at the environment, it's all about natural law. So we think that the proper forum is the United Nations, because you have delegations of Indigenous people, nations of the world. So hopefully the message that we give to them is one that they will take to heart and look, take that quantum leap, shall we say, you know, from looking at historical issues of treaties, a look at Indigenous people and the cultural beliefs that they have, that have allowed us. It has allowed us to survive. For myself, I have always been an activist for all kinds of issues, and when I make a presentation, I always remind people that I'm a Dakota, and that I'm a twin, and lastly, I'm a woman, and that's how I look at myself, putting who I am first, being a Dakota person, Lake Travers Reservation is in northeastern South Dakota, so that we're all part of, you know, the Sioux Nation. And I think the terminology has been accepted, you know, by people in the United States and in the world, the Sioux Nation, you know. So the Sioux Nation is made up of, you know, Dakota, Lakota, Nakota people, the different dialects that I think all people have come to understand. So myself, I'm a Sisitua. When we look at the Sioux Nation, Sisitua Wakwetua, Dewakantu, Tituwa Wakwekute Yangtua. I think people have come to understand, you know, that Tituans are Lakota people. The other nations, Sisitua Wakwetua, reside in South Dakota. Dewakantu, they reside in Minnesota, Wakwekute. They reside in South Dakota. So it just kind of creates a better understanding of who the Sioux Nation is, very active in how they look at themselves, sharing their culture, informing people, just as it is in Canada. You know, we have Dakota members in Canada also, you know, so this kind of historical significance that people in the United States, possibly in the world, have to come to understand the separation of, you know, the relocation of Dakota people, you know, into Canada, having the same cultural background, having the same lineage. They are either Sisitua or the Wakwetua. People in the United States probably accept, you know, terminology Sisseton and Wahpeton.
Right, that's what I've seen online. I want to ask you about the UN forum and not only cultural awareness that you're bringing, but you wanted to also bring a spiritual awareness to this forum. Could you describe what that means?
I think that, you know, when you communicate with people, you know, all people, you know, have unique beliefs, you know, a religion perhaps. For us, we relate to that as being spiritual. Our cultural beliefs, who we are and what we understand about life and relationships, natural laws are in place, you know, that determine how we live our lives and how we interact with relationships. In our belief, we say the two-leggeds. The two-leggeds, of course, are all the human beings. And the four-leggeds are the four-leggeds. That's how we understand relationships. Strong cultural values, a millennium of people, you know, oral historians have passed on cultural beliefs and customs to us. We are the carriers, you know, of those values and of those beliefs. Our spirituality stems from a millennium ago. We teach this to our children, our grandchildren. We say that Great Spirit God, and there is only one God, sent a woman to teach us how to pray because we didn't have that understanding. So Great Spirit sent a woman to us to bring us this spiritual awareness, this spiritual teaching. We are people of the pipe. We call ourselves pipe carriers. We carry pipe for the people. Another definition, perhaps, is it is a way of life for us, you know, and for the Sioux Nation as a whole. That first pipe is still in existence. It's here in South Dakota. You know. I think at different times they bring out the pipe so that Sioux Nation, you know, can gather and make prayers for a future, for not only for ourselves, but for people in the nationally or in the world. When we talk about common people, we say Iksherichasha, the common man. We are all common man, you know. We are not at different levels of survival. The cultural beliefs that we have, you know, have allowed us to survive and interact. The values that we have are common to all people. We say that we have the greatest respect for people of the world. the compassion that people have to know and understand, you know, the uniqueness of people, be able to contribute to each other, the generosity. When you come to the Sioux Nation, you know, they exhibit this generosity. You know, they give you many things, gifts perhaps, so that we understand the concept of generosity. And of course, you know, calmness, you know. We all have to have calmness in our lives. You know, it generates that respect that we have for everything. And patience. I think many of us, you know, do not have enough patience. You know, when we want something in our lives, we do not want to wait. So patience is one of the values that teaches us to wait for many things in our life. We also say in our language, wahakikta, you know, leave no one behind. If we are going to walk forward in life, then not only the Sioux Nation, but nations of the world and nationally, we all have to walk together if we are going to survive in a time when there is so much lack, I guess, of understanding, you know, between people. So for us as a Sioux Nation, for myself as a Dakota person, all women are natural teachers. We are the teachers of our children. We instill in them the respect for all people, all living things.
We're speaking with Darlene Pipeboy. She is a Dakota elder and will be joining a group of other Native Americans going to the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues in May. Darlene, how do you plan to get to New York City?
Well, I think Native people, you know, living within America, in the richest country, and Canada also, I think one of the concepts is that the government gives us money, but it does not. That's not. We are like everyone else. You know, if employment is available, we also have to work. So this kind of economic strategy, shall we say, we have to be able to get from South Dakota to New York and be able to attend. I guess this economic strategy, you know, we have to come up with ways to do this. We feel that our attendance is very important. I think we live in a time of challenges, and the better understanding that we have of each other, you know, is to be able to share information, you know, be able to bring documents to the United Nations of our treaty relationships with the United States and Canada. I think people of the United States and the world, perhaps, you know, when we look at forms of governance, et cetera, you know, that our relationship with, you know, United States and Canada is born out of treaty. Whether or not we have that understanding, I think that we have come to that time. You know, we have to create that awareness.
Right. You had mentioned that if people do want to help the group to travel to this UN forum, there is a way that they can help you?
Yes, I have an email address for people to communicate with me, and then I'm going to spell it for you. It's WICASA. We say Wichasha, the red man. WICASA 40 at hotmail.com. That's my email address.
The forum is going to be beginning at the UN on May 20th. I hope to be there. And listeners, it should be a very interesting experience as well to check out. Darlene Pipeboy, Dakota Elder, thank you so much for being on In Other News and giving us this update.
I appreciate the opportunity. You know, I think that knowing and understanding, communicating with people, you know, creates a better understanding, you know, of who Native people are, indigenous people in the United States. there's 471 nations, you know, living within the United States. And then when you compare, you know, with statistics, there's 1,000, over 1,000 nations within the United States and Canada. So it's a significant group of people, you know, and being able to communicate again, you know, with people of all faiths and all cultures and all ethnicities. You know, we live in a country of diverse people, you know, and we have to understand, know, and respect each other, you know, and be able to take our place, so to say.
Indeed. Darlene, thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to be on your radio program, and I hope we get the opportunity to speak again.
If you're a regular listener to the show, you know that we often visit the topic of geoengineering, the stratospheric aerosol operations known as chemtrails. There is a mountain of data showing the damaging effects of these operations. Returning guest Dane Wigington is becoming one of the leading activists against geoengineering and revealing the harmful effects to humans and the ecosystems. Awareness is building, he says, within the academic community. It's slow, but it's happening. Also, after years of appealing to military whistleblowers, a former Air Force soldier has confirmed the military's involvement in atmospheric spraying operations. Dane Wigington is a former solar power engineer and now runs the site geoengineeringwatch.org. Dane Wigington, welcome back to In Other News.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me back and allowing me to give an update on the most dire issue of geoengineering.
I get some comments from listeners. Well, this issue, Jeff, when I listen to it, it's very depressing. It seems like there's nothing anyone can do. It appears to be changing in terms of people connecting to each other, especially out in California in your way, but also scientists. And can you describe what's going on with people connecting to each other now?
It is happening. And for those that think, well, we can't do anything, that's a really defeatist attitude that if they could just abandon that and try to do what they could themselves, I think they would find we would reach critical mass quite quickly. Only a few have managed to reach a great many so far. So if we had some help, then we indeed could reach critical mass. What we have happening here in the West is finally an awakening is happening with very diverse groups, such as the Tea Party and even environmental groups joining together on this, even attending the same meetings. And now there's quite a bit of organization to presenting data and making new contacts on this issue. And I've had presentations one or two a week in the last 6-8 weeks. I've had contact from 4 scientists from major universities, Stanford, Harvard, and Duke, or 3 of those 4. And there appears to be a stirring within the circle of academia, also an awakening to these programs and just how lethal they are. And now there is communication happening with some of those scientists, and they are disseminating some data to the outside for us to use. And if we could just reach that critical mass again, this would be on the radar quite quickly, because the damage showing up with the climate system now is so horrific that people are truly realizing something's very wrong. And that's, there's a silver lining to that. That's a tool in our favor to bring these programs to light. And we just need to all pull together in that effort.
Can you remind listeners, if somebody's just tuning in and they're not certain what we're actually talking about here, because it is an assumption that people listening now would know what we're talking about, referencing past shows and this ongoing aerosol operation. But can you briefly describe to listeners what geoengineering is, and especially creating a more conductive atmosphere?
Geoengineering is the manipulation and modification of Earth's climate systems on a global scale. At face value, this would appear total insanity, and in fact, that's exactly what it is. And any notion that this could be done without putting all life on Earth at risk is a very naive and insane notion. And after a decade of research on this subject, I truly believe that, short of nuclear catastrophe, geoengineering is the greatest and most immediate threat to all life on Earth. The way the engineering programs are done, Jeff, is there's stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, acronym SAG, and this is the spraying, intentional spraying, of reflective nanoparticulates into the atmosphere on an unbelievably massive scale. In fact, the stated goal by the world's most recognized geoengineer, David Keith, was 20 million tons annually. This has now formed literally a cocoon of toxic metal around the planet. Global dimming is fully 22%. That's 22% of the sun's direct rays no longer reaching the surface of the planet. This is the stated goal of geoengineering patents and geoengineers, which don't seem to take into account that everything they spray comes down to the ground, which we all breathe, and these sprayed particulates shred the ozone layer. They completely disrupt the hydrological cycle, the rain cycle. They're literally poisoning everything on the ground. This is not any sort of alarmism. This is fact. We have the data to back it up. So geoengineering, again, is literally the terraforming of the planet for various purposes, some we know, some we can't know. Military strategic purposes, control of food supplies and populations, but quite simply, geoengineering holds at this point all life on Earth in the balance, and that's based on hard data.
You have the spraying of these nanoparticles. We're breathing this in. It's affecting our health, the health of the planet, the health of ecosystems as well, and we'll get into that a bit later, but there's also another aspect to it, and that is the electromagnetics that are put through these conductive metallic nanoparticles. Can you bring people up to speed on that dimension?
Yeah, I'm sorry you mentioned that. I didn't quite follow through. That's another very important and lethal aspect of these particulates. The more that we absorb, and we do absorb them, nanoparticulates can be actually even absorbed through the skin. They're certainly absorbed through the lung lining, where they go straight into the bloodstream. And these particles tend to adhere to cell receptors like a plaque, and they build up. And all of this makes our bodies more conductive. The spraying into the atmosphere makes the atmosphere more conductive. And now with cell phones, cell towers, smart meters, all of these radio frequency signals are now much more lethal to our systems because of this conductivity. So it's a very, very downward spiral, and the ramifications to the human organism are huge. And the absorption of these metal particulates too, Jeff, there's a synergistic toxicity. We all have mercury in us. We know that from the vaccines as one source, and the breathing of residue from hydrocarbon burning is another. And when these metals are combined, Jeff, there's a synergistic toxicity that occurs. And most people are completely unaware of such a factor. But according to research that we have been given, when mercury, which we all have in us, is combined with aluminum, which we now all have in us from these aerosol spraying programs, toxicity can increase as much as 10,000%. So the lethality of these programs to our health and to the environment and to the planet as a whole cannot be overstated. These are absolutely life-threatening programs for the planet as a whole. And we see the species extinction rate today reflecting a direct connection to that. We feel the current rate is up to 200 species a day are being lost, and much of this can be traced to things that are aspects of mortality that we believe connect directly to the geoengineering aerosol programs.
Right. Another source of mercury, as many listeners may know, is the amalgam fillings that were put into our mouths. Getting back to the scientists, in terms of connecting to a lot of the scientists now, they're becoming aware of these programs, despite what they've been told. And academia, as many listeners may know, you know, tend not to see the elephant in the room at times. And but that's beginning to change. Why is this important?
It's extremely important that academia recognizes what should be patently obvious, and it's been disheartening in the past that, you know, the example that comes to mind for me is a lot of the scientific community, it seems they could watch a house burning to the ground and they would have to analyze the ashes for 10 years before they would actually state it's a fire. And this is really something we need to get past, because this elephant in the room is virtually decimating the planet, the geoengineering. And we recently posted an article that made mention of the fact that the scientific community is still completely oblivious to this very obvious fact, these geoengineering programs. And the caption we put was a bunch of chimpanzees covering their eyes with a sky full of trails. And that's sort of what we feel we have. I mean, the data showing up from these programs is absolutely inarguable, but yet they still seem to ignore them. NOAA has published an article recently that acknowledged the atmosphere is full of particulates of unknown origin. They have no idea where they're coming from. And you have a lot of other data like that where scientists acknowledge this contamination but just seem to scratch their heads as the source. They can't seem to see the aircraft up there emitting this stuff and connect the dots with the geoengineering patents, the stated goals of geoengineers. For those that deny these programs are going on, Jeff, we have footage now that was sent to us by people in Italy, up close and personal behind a spray aircraft, nozzles visible, turning on and off. There's no dispute this is going on, so people need to wake up before there's nothing left to salvage.
Right, but getting back to the scientists, Dane, what would it look like for scientists to take a stand? How would that process occur?
Well, that's a great question, because here in the Pacific Northwest, I mean, I know that USDA, I know some USDA scientists that know, California Department of Fish and Game, U.S. Forest Service, I spoke to NOAA scientists recently, all of whom know this is going on, but they don't have any First Amendment protection. So they're afraid to speak out, even though they're very alarmed about these programs. But so much of academia knows that I think it's a matter of public awareness reaching a point where media has to begin to cover this issue, and then I think the dam would break from 100 different directions. And even some of the scientists that tend to live in bubbles, and many of them do, once they become aware of this and once enough of that awareness filters out, then, again, I think we'll have critical mass. And just from one scientist from Stanford who sent out about 150 emails to other colleagues around the globe in universities, other scientists, and got a number of responses back from those scientists that indicated they knew there was this heavy metal contamination coming down but had no idea the source, and now they're connecting that dot. So it takes effort from the inside, from the outside, but it's critical that we all pull this yoke, because time is not on our side, and these programs are literally pounding the nails into our collective coffins. Every breath we take is laden with these particles. It's all building up on our systems. It's building up in the environment. It's doing irreparable damage to the atmosphere. So, again, this is a very dire, time-sensitive, critical issue to bring to light.
You had put together a PowerPoint presentation that really encapsulates and compresses a lot of the critical issues related to geoengineering and the aerosol operations. Can you tell listeners what that's about?
That should be posted on our site, which is geoengineeringwatch.org. We should have something up in about a week. I've been doing a number of presentations to various groups in Northern California, and this is important too, the erasing of lines in the sand. And these groups is from the Tea Party to environmental groups to farmers, all of whom come together to try to learn more about this issue, and we all need to work together on this subject. The PowerPoint's about 90-plus images done in quite rapid succession, covering most of the major aspects of this issue from A to Z, including the radical increase in Alzheimer's, dementia, autism, species extinction rate, the drought-inducing effects of these programs, the fact that we've had, even as recently as 2 weeks ago, the head admiral for the U.S. Navy stating that climate change is now considered the greatest threat to American security, national security. And again, the paradox is, even though they acknowledge that, they are actually fueling that fire. So this is the irony in the situation. You know, you have a lot of recognition of this problem while they are stoking the fire at the same time. But this PowerPoint will really, I think, drive home the direness of this issue. Should have something posted in about a week, but we're trying to get good tools out there so that people don't have to run out in the street, point at the sky, and start ranting, because that simply doesn't work to spread the word. It just puts people's defenses up. But if you can give them something credible that has images, graphs, charts, data to back it up, then when people are in their own home, in their own comfort zone, and they can watch something like that to try to assimilate it, that's much more effective than just pointing and ranting.
When will this PowerPoint be available on geoengineeringwatch.org?
I think by the end of next week. And this is what we're trying to do, because it's sterile to have a prefab thing put together. And this will be just a recording of a live presentation. A lot of the groups I've been presenting to have been taping the presentations, and we're just simply going to have them give us a copy of one that's coming up, and then we'll have a live presentation copy that's, again, very condensed and hard-hitting, about 90-plus images, and that should be into next week, Jeff.
All right, I look forward to that. Now, Dane, locally in California, farmers, other concerned people in the area are gathering together, as you pointed out. Can you give us more information on that so listeners in this area can do the same thing?
It's a matter of starting spot fires with people. And, you know, when you introduce to people that the fact that they are being affected personally by these programs, and there is nobody alive that's not being affected, then once they realize it's in their self-interest to look after this issue to raise awareness on it, then that's usually the key to gaining momentum. In the case of the farmers here in California, our climate is so far off at this point. We averaged here in California, in spite of these winter snowstorms that are geoengineered, and we have really a lot of data to back up that statement. In other parts of the country, in order for them to do that, they have baked us here in California. We've averaged for the last year, averaged somewhere in the range of 10 degrees above normal day and night, and extremely dry as they aerosolize the storms coming in. This is what we see, a heavy spraying as storms move across the Pacific Northwest and Northern California.
Dana, I want to stop you there. Aerosolize the storms, which means they take out the moisture of the storms, so you don't get the rain.
Yes, many people, aerosol is just a tiny particulate suspended in the atmosphere. These are the metal particulates that we're speaking about, and as you saturate the atmosphere with that, there's too many condensation nuclei, so the water does not combine, the drops don't combine and fall as rain, they just keep migrating. So they spray us heavily, they migrate the rain right across us, traps more heat than it deflects, these aerosols. So we're way above average, way drier than normal. We have trees dying everywhere here in the Pacific Northwest, and that the farmers are suffering horrifically. And just the location where I live, Jeff, in the last 6 years, we're about 200 inches of rain short. That's a phenomenal amount of rain. And this is actually where the drinking water comes from for Southern California. I live right next to Lake Shasta. So these guys are wreaking havoc on the climate system, and now the farmers, in this case, back to your original question, realize that something is horribly wrong, and now they're trying to get to the bottom of it. And so if we can fuel that momentum, and people back east, for example, where this heavy, wet snow falls, this is an issue that you guys have been cooler than we have been out here in the West, but that's Weather Channel's new term, heavy, wet snow. That's because the snow is being artificially ice-nucleated, chemically nucleated. It falls at, it can fall at temperatures up in the high 40s. We've even seen it in the low 50s. And this is a very high water content snow because it's not naturally freezing on its own. It decimates trees, power lines, structures, and we have patents for this process. We're not guessing. So, and China, for those that doubt that, actually can look up Chinese scientists create artificial snowstorm. The Chinese are doing it. Are we to think that we're not when we see snow falling at those temperatures with such heavy characteristics to it? And so there's really nothing in the weather system at this point that's quote-unquote natural. And if the planet's not allowed to respond, and soon, I think that we're in for an extremely dark horizon. But on the other hand, if everybody wakes up and helps bring this to light, we can be on the right track sooner than we think if we all pull together.
Another component that I recently became aware of, it I read on the back of a, I think it was a Smart Water the copy on the back of the bottle, it said, "Have you noticed that clouds get a bad rap?" Well, clouds actually are great. You know, but that first question made me think about this controversy of the spraying of the atmosphere and the lines in the sky and people bringing awareness to that. And here a water company is saying, don't worry about it, just chill out, clouds are important. There are a lot of corporations with a lot to gain from these operations. And do you suspect that bottled water companies are among them?
I think what you have in the case of the water companies you mentioned, or in the case of a much bigger player like Monsanto, they're simply the vultures that are feeding on the carcass. I think these programs are much greater in gravity and magnitude, and they just simply are riding on the coattails and trying to pick up the crumbs. And the inception of these programs, which clearly was for power, control, manipulation of food supplies, military strategic purposes, and this goes back to documents even in the 60s, which we have some posted on our website, 80-page documents, U.S. government outline of the weather modification programs in the 60s, budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars even then. But along the way, the more they've meddled with this system, now they have damaged it to a degree that can't be remedied. They have released climate feedback loops that can't be turned off. And now I believe there's actually a panic in the power structure, Jeff, that even though Monsanto and these water companies and so forth are feeding on the damage, the disaster capitalists, I believe that those in power now know they have torpedoed their own ship, that the damage they have done can't be repaired in any reasonable time scale. And now, as I said in the beginning, they're doubling down. They're spraying even more in a very lethal effect to try to, as long as possible, hide the damage already done. This is the Corexit cure, like in the Gulf of Mexico. For those who don't know what Corexit was, it was the oil disbursement that BP had sprayed to hide the magnitude of that problem. And by some reports, spraying Corexit made the Gulf 52 times more toxic. But nobody gave a damn because it helped hide the problem. And that's the same mentality we're dealing with right now. It's the pharmaceutical cure for planet Earth with a list of consequences that are exponentially worse than the problem to begin with. But it's a very vicious cycle. And again, we have to break this cycle. If there's going to be any environment left to salvage, or any of our health left to salvage, we have to break this cycle. We have to bring this to light. All of us have to help raise awareness on this issue. And it's not up to just one or two of us. And in order to raise awareness, you have to know a little bit about what you're talking about, arm yourself with good tools to convince others, and do it in an effective manner. You can't just, again, point and rant.
Recently, there was a woman, former military Air Force soldier, who had spoken out about the tests conducted in and around the Air Force base that she was stationed at. There is somebody from the military speaking out. We had talked about this earlier in hopes, you know, somebody from the inside in the military would come forward. And, well, here is someone, and it's also confirming the military's involvement if what she's saying is true.
It's Kristen Edwards, and I know her. I've spoken to her on the phone a number of times. She's very courageous, great gal. And it is something new in the sense that she's speaking from a firsthand sense. She has seen the chemical canisters and been around part of these operations. And it takes a great deal of courage to speak out in being shunned by her peers, and who knows what other risks she's taking in doing so. But she does have something new to say for the fact that she's a firsthand witness. And I hope people will take a look at what she's already said, and we hope to have a new interview with her soon. But we need more like her. And again, for those in the military that know this is going on, and this is one of our goals, We certainly believe that most in the military, Jeff, have no idea, as Kristen didn't initially, what they're participating in. And if we could raise awareness to the level where those in the military, our brothers and sisters, know what they're a part of, that they are literally poisoning their own countrymen, their own families, their own children, their own posterity, that they would then refuse to participate. And I've been told by one of these scientists that's contacted me from a university that is involved with geoengineering research, that some of those participating are now refusing to because they understand the gravity of this issue. we need to reach that point where enough defect from these programs where they can't carry them out, because the vast majority certainly have no idea what they're participating in, and we need to remedy that soon.
Online and on YouTube, there are a lot of videos now pinpointing specific locations where radar facilities or HARP facilities could be generating microwave waves to influence weather. There are a number of HARP facilities out there around the planet. More and more people are also becoming aware of specific locations, especially around the Antarctica and other remote islands in the middle of the ocean, that are influencing weather patterns. Have you noticed that, Dane?
Well, certainly we believe there to be perhaps at least 18 HARP facilities around the planet. HARP, for those who don't know what it is, High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. And what these installations are ionosphere heaters. That sounds a little hard to wrap your arms around, but they literally do heat the ionosphere from the ground. The main facility in Alaska can transmit, it's thought, as much as 2.7 billion watts of power into the ionosphere. This causes a chain reaction, and they can heat the ionosphere to 15,000 degrees Fahrenheit over areas hundreds of square miles. This causes a bulge in the atmosphere, and that's the method in which they steer the jet stream. And again, the level of insanity that really centers around these programs, I mean, it's folly of the first order to meddle with these systems and literally rip holes in the atmosphere. But now there's 18 of these facilities. We have competing powers with these facilities, China and Russia as well. And it's a tug of war over the atmosphere that literally holds life on Earth in the balance. So people need to brush up on this issue. We try to post, again, our data on geoengineeringwatch.org, Jeff. No politics, just geoengineering. And we hope it's a good tool for everyone to use to help bring this issue to light.
Well, Dane, thank you once again for bringing us up to date on the activism related to weather control, atmospheric spraying. It's very, very important, critical material. Can you tell us once again what listeners can do?
Everybody can play a huge part in bringing this dire issue to light, Jeff. And from their own home computer, if people searched for groups, organizations, individuals that would care, if they had a clue this was going on in our skies, the list is really almost endless. ADD groups, Alzheimer's groups, autism groups, agricultural groups, farm groups, of various types, environmental groups. I mean, the list goes on and on. So if you find a contact for those groups, round up credible data, send them an email, plead with them to investigate this issue, make flyers. We have flyers posted on geoengineeringwatch.org that are good tools that people have made from around the country. Those can be used. 10 cents a copy, you can pass on some hard data to somebody. So learn a little bit about the issue, get credible data, and try to send out flaming arrows. The more flaming arrows we send out, the more spot fires we might start, and the quicker we can bring this issue to light, because time is of the essence here.
Dane Wigington, former Bechtel engineer and currently one of the leading geoengineering activists who runs geoengineeringwatch.org, thanks again very much for being on In Other News. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady.
Mm-hmm.